So the psalmist said, they spoke against God, saying, can God spread a table in the wilderness? Sounds like a modern complaint, doesn't it? Speaking out against God amidst a chaotic world, asking, what has God done for us lately? But we don't usually expect it of those ancient Hebrews. I mean, after all, they had such memorable and powerful experiences of the living God. Moses and the burning bush, the plagues that affected the Egyptians but passed over the Israelites, the dramatic escape from their Egyptian pursuers who drowned crossing the sea, the cloud, the pillar of fire. I mean, that's pretty heady stuff within the religious history of this people of God. So what more could they ask? And yet here were the Ephraimites, one of the largest tribes of the Hebrew people, declaring that it was not enough. They were hungry. They wanted food for their empty stomachs. And they began to insist that the God who had done all those things in the past was now somehow no longer around, couldn't provide such food as they needed, and perhaps had abandoned them. I suppose this fits under the category that there is nothing new under the sun, is there? The more things change, the more they stay the same. And indeed, in today's world, people starving to death in the poorest places of the world, with women and children being abducted, violently abused, and murdered, continuing warring conflicts in Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, and other places that threaten to involve more and more countries and are causing increasing protests and unrest in the world and in our own country. The continued threat of terrorism ever with us as we live in a world where terrorist acts occur almost daily, where jealous anger among many peoples is unabated, and where proud ignorance seems to rule. And ecological poisoning, all too prevalent, drug trafficking, pervasive and unchecked, violence seemingly on the rise, and people everywhere living under painful and splintering stress. It's really a depressing litany of woes, isn't it? If ever there was a wilderness-like experience by which we could identify with the ancient Hebrews, our chaotic atmosphere today of hunger and hurt and hopelessness is it. And we find our voices joining that of the psalmist. Can God spread a table in the wilderness? Can God do anything to offset these challenging and horrible conditions we know? Can God really produce within us a sense of hope and promise and security in the midst of such difficult days as we know? Now, the psalmist on this point is very clear. God can and God does provide a table in the wilderness. In Eugene Peterson's translation, the psalmist goes on to say, when God heard their complaints, he was furious. It was clear they didn't believe God, had no intention of trusting in his help. But God helped them anyway, commanded the clouds and gave orders that opened the gates of heaven. He rained down showers of manna to eat. He gave them the bread of heaven. They ate the bread of the mighty angels. He sent them all the food that they could eat. He gave them everything they craved on a platter. Now, perhaps there's a little poetic license the psalmist is taking with these words to call the white, sticky secretions from the tamarisk bush nourishing goo that became dry and flaky when it fell from the bush, the bread of the mighty angels. Well, I don't know. It seems a bit much. But the psalmist was a man of faith. And to him, the fact that such wilderness food was wondrously provided and was able to sustain his people in the desert was enough to call forth songs of praise to God, the God who provided it all. To his mind, God had indeed spread a table in the wilderness and had provided a feast for those hungry ex-slaves who were wandering, journeying in the desert. I suppose what one sees in a situation like that depends on one's inner nature or disposition. The cynic or the agnostic says that it's only some sugary secretions from desert plants. No big deal. It just happens. The one who believes, though, somehow sees, senses, knows deep inside that it was indeed the bread of the angels and a table set in the wilderness. I remember a friend who described to me once a religious experience that he had had some years ago. It involved a sudden lifting of the dark, dense fog of depression and a healing from a serious illness that was his. At the moment when his depression lifted, he said he felt a healing of body and mind and told me that he had seen a bright light. He sensed that it was a spiritual presence of some kind, but as he talked, he seemed reluctant and almost embarrassed to speak about the light. You see, his years of living in the cynical secular world had made him somewhat hesitant to admit the divine nature of his release from his illness. Now, sad to say, the world can do that to us, can't it? But don't you suppose that the person's life is richer who is able to see, who is given to see the religious and the redemptive significance in the course of daily events? Doesn't it make the everyday world a whole lot more precious, even sacred? And if we really do believe that God exists and does care for us each new day in strengthening, healing ways, doesn't it give more of a sense of depth and meaning to what we experience? Doesn't it give us a greater appreciation for the many astonishing wonders of life that surround us that our young soloists sang so beautifully today about? Doesn't it nudge our faith gratefully to recognize the relationship between the small things that we experience in our world and the hand of our Creator? Some years ago, Yo-Yo Ma walked quietly upon the stage at the Royal Conservatory Concert Hall in Manchester, England. There was no piano, no music stand, no orchestra, just a solitary chair upon that great stage. He played a piece called The Cellist of Sarajevo, written by a contemporary English composer named David Wilde, which revealed a very poignant story. On May 27, 1992, a bakery in Sarajevo, which happened to have a supply of flour, was baking bread and distributing it to the starving, war-shattered people. At 4 p.m. in that city, a long line stretched out into the street when suddenly, without any warning, a shell exploded in the midst of those innocent civilians, killing 22 people and splattering blood and gore throughout the area. Vedran Smilovic, who had been principal cellist for the Sarajevo Opera Company before the war, lived less than 100 yards from that scene. And when he saw that massacre outside his window, he was pushed beyond his capacity to endure it any longer. Driven by his anguish, he decided that he had to take action. And so he did the only thing that he knew how to do. He began to make music. Every day thereafter, for the next 22 days in honor of those innocent lives who were killed, Vidvan Smilovic put on his full formal concert attire, walked out of his apartment into the middle of the bomb craters, and he would play a concert to the abandoned streets while bombs and bullets flew all around him. Day after day, he made his unimaginably courageous stand for human dignity, for compassion, for civilization, for peace. Somehow, by the grace of God, he was never hurt, though his darkest hour came when, upon taking a little walk to stretch his legs, his cello was shelled and destroyed where he had just been sitting. And so now, some years later, in England, Yo-Yo Ma sat down quietly on his little stool on that great stage in his white shirt and tails, and he began this piece, The Cellist of Sarajevo. Softly and almost imperceptibly, the music began. It created a shadowy, empty universe pervaded by a sense of death. Gradually, though, it built and grew into an agonizing, screaming, slashing furor that slowly subsided back into a desolate death rattle, fading seamlessly back into a hushed silence. When he finished, he remained bent over his cello, his bow still resting on the strings. No one moved, scarcely daring to breathe, having just experienced themselves something of that horrible scene in Sarajevo. After a long period of absolute silence, Yo-Yo Ma straightened in his chair. He looked into the audience, and then he raised his hand. He beckoned someone to come to the stage. And as the audience peered into the darkness, they suddenly realized that it was he, the cellist of Sarajevo himself. As Yo-Yo Ma and Vidvan Smilovic met each other with arms flung wide open and then embraced, the concert hall erupted with an emotional, overwhelming frenzy. Here was a room filled with people whose lives had been devoted largely to the cello, such a simple, unassuming instrument. Here from all over the world were bow makers, collectors, amateurs, historians, varnishers, and of course, the great masters. They had come to celebrate the cello together for a week. And here on the first night, they encountered this man who had played his cello in the face of bombs and death and ruin, and had defied them and had overcome them. His cello became the sword of Joan of Arc. His cello and music had become the mightiest weapon of all. Is it possible for God to provide a table in the wilderness? Is it possible in a world of wars and terrorism and starvation and unhappiness, a world red in tooth and claw, as Tennyson put it, for us to see God's hand at work among us? Indeed, is it possible for us to believe that God is mysteriously here in the meager offerings of this table before us today, feeding and strengthening us so that we, you and I, can mount up with wings like eagles and can run and not be weary and walk and not faint within such a world as ours? The faith of the psalmist says, yes, God is here. The faith of Vidrin Smejlovic says, yes, God is here. Jesus, our Lord, caught up in the midst of a spiritual war zone in a Middle Eastern city, surrounded by disciples failing in courage, fickle crowds, conniving religious leaders, and clueless officials, Jesus nevertheless stood serene, playing heaven's transforming music, which declared unmistakably, yes, God is with us, that we're not alone, that God is here.